Okay. Hello, everybody. Thanks for staying to the end. A number of years ago, I did a study with my group of colleagues on this slide about the prevalence of elder abuse, and it took 11 years to get it funded, 10 submissions of the same grant, basically, addressing inane comments that went back and forth. But we got it funded. The problem was they made me remove everything that had to do with outcomes because it wasn't consistent with what the funding angle was at the time. So I snuck back in a couple of questions. That's what we're going to talk about today. So review the prevalence and look at some of these differences. So basically we looked at almost 6,000 older adults. We also looked at a sample of proxies to see if they would report on themselves at a level consistent with what the older adults were reporting, because Carl Pillemer and others had found that that was a good way to talk about elder abuse. It didn't work for us. This is a community residing sample, so these are independently residing elders that we're talking about, Spanish and English. And older people are nice to study because they cooperate and they do surveys and they're nice, not like the younger group that only will text with you, won't do anything, although that's ironically where the surveys are going to go. We also did financial abuse and neglect, but for this talk, I'm focusing on the three bigger abuse types that people normally talk about, and that are a little easier for me to talk about, to be honest. So basically, you know, a little bit more women than men, all over 60, and we had a nice representation of race and ethnic diversity consistent with that in the country. Half the sample is under $35,000 a year, so not terribly wealthy, and that's sort of consistent with what we know when you're on a fixed income after you retire. About a fifth reported that they had pretty poor health, and not just associated with aging. Half had low social support, and that's worrying because social support is protective against a bunch of health problems, a bunch of mental health problems, and it turns out from this survey, against elder abuse, because if you're connected to people, there's probably somebody who would know if you're being abused, more likely. And remember, this is independently residing elders. Although there was pretty high use of community services that didn't give people the support they needed. So the definition of elder mistreatment basically went back and forth on how we were going to define emotional abuse, and I finally showed the questions to a couple of friends who are cops, and they said, yeah, if I saw that happening, I would have to intervene. And I said, okay, good, that's how we'll define it. Because if you know this field, you know that for years and years and years, nothing got done because nobody could agree on what the data elements were, which that's going to be hopefully resolved soon by our friends from the CDC, who will do what they did with child abuse and domestic violence and put out the data elements so that we can all use the same tools. But until then, we went with these. And if you look at this, we wanted to know recent distant past, any perpetrator, not just caretakers, and whether or not it was reported, because as a default cognitive set, we know to report to us only those crimes reported to police by people you know, or by strangers, if it were a crime survey, and only recent ones. So we wanted to get past that and go to the event. So this was the abuse definition, and these are all available at the NIJ site. But basically, it's being really mean, repeatedly, such that the person either felt threatened or was clearly emotionally abused. And here's the prevalence, and this has been cited a lot of times. I put it out there. You have since age 60, so any abuse happening since the person turned age 60, which is an important number because that's, you know, that's all elder abuse, and then past year is about 4%. Now, here's the outcomes. There is absolutely no reason to study elder abuse if it doesn't do anything bad to the person, if it's just an event, because we don't study, you know, oh look, it's fall again and the leaves are falling and one hit me and so now I have a leaf injury. That doesn't happen because you don't get injured by leaves. So we wanted to know, and we still want to know, is there a problem with being abused? The reason is, until you put a cost, both health, mental health, and dollar, on something, its relevance is hard to sell to policymakers and the others. By the way, the drive in elder abuse, the real drive is financial exploitation, meaning it costs something and that's why people care about it. And so these other types of elder mistreatment are sort of being pulled along with that one. But look at this. General health problems, this is all self-rated, you know, it's a survey, about a 50% increase, and that's total sample men and women. Pain, about a 50% increase. If you were one of the people who said you were abused, and by the way, I ran all these with social support as a mitigating factor, it helps a little bit, but the abuse, once it happens, results in these sort of health problems, pain, and this is emotional mistreatment, reduced energy to a lesser extent, but all significant. So emotional mistreatment resulting in these, and then emotional mistreatment resulting in emotional problems. Well, yes, that happened as well. So people said, when we asked about emotional problems, almost double the amount if you've been mistreated by emotional abuse. Now, functional impairment. So what? You felt sad, somebody abused you. Did it really interfere with your ability to live your life? Well, absolutely. Almost double. So we know that from the 5 questions that I was allowed to sneak back into the survey, that emotional mistreatment does have negative health and mental health effects for these people. And these effects are not small. They are 50 to 100% higher in that group. And this is with the SF-36, by the way. The questions were taken out of that. So, physical and emotional. That's a little summary. Let's look at physical assault. Now, this one we would expect health-related consequences, right? Because that's the whole point. The point of physical assault is to injure the person and cause a health consequence. So, we did, in fact, see that. Prevalence is lower, thank goodness, for physical assault in both men and women. That's past year and since age 60. And the health outcomes are as expected, about double. If you're physically assaulted, your general health is worse, you had more pain, and for women at least, you had significantly reduced energy. Emotional problems, off the charts. Guess what? This is one of those studies we really didn't need to fund, I guess. But it would be nice to know what the risk factors were, because not everybody who was abused had these problems. There's a subset of people who were mistreated who then developed these emotional and physical problems. So we have a lot of emotional problems in terms of physical, and then how much does it impact your life? Again, off the charts. So, again, a consistent finding. Elder abuse does cause negative outcomes. We now know this, because before this, we didn't really, other than the obvious, have that. And then sexual abuse. Now, the rates of sexual abuse were, again, thank goodness, much lower. These are all forms of sexual abuse, and really primarily focused on women. That's not because I think that it only happens to women, but that generation for a male to be sexually abused and then to report it to us is an extraordinarily rare event because of stigma and other things. So really, these data focus on women, and there's the overall prevalence. General health problems, as you would expect, much worse for those who are sexually abused. Pain, there was not enough people in there who reported that to really pull. Probably with a bigger sample we would have seen it, because you can see that the bars are very different. And reduced energy. And then on the emotional, the mental health outcome side, you can see double and more than double the amount of emotional problems and functional impairment. So the bottom line is we have about a 1 in 10 rate of abuse. If you ignore financial abuse, it goes up to about 14% if you include financial abuse. So we have a lot of people who are being mistreated, about 4% of which is emotional mistreatment. People like us to break that out, because some people don't consider that real mistreatment. I will say, ironically, that is the type of mistreatment rated as the worst from people who have poly victimization. And as you can see, the negative outcomes, health and mental health, of emotional mistreatment sort of map onto those of physical and sexual. So about 10% are being mistreated, and each of those types of mistreatment causes negative health and mental health outcomes. However, we don't know what the protective factors are. We don't know what the risk factors are. We don't know the nature, quality, or course of these things. And we actually don't know the temporal order. It could be that people with health problems are less mobile or less likely to seek out help, and therefore more likely to be victimized. It could be an opportunistic cause. I think that's unlikely, but until we get a longitudinal study, we won't know that. But what we do know is the initial signal is there. People say correlation is not causation, but the converse is also true, that causation does not exist without correlation. And so at least we have the correlation there. If you're abused, you have much worse outcomes. And so that is step 1 in determining the cost, extent, and importance of the problem. Mm-hmm.